Waikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Hi, everyone, and welcome. So what if the reality you navigate every day, the one grounded in logic and what you can, you know, see and touch, what if that's just one small slice of what's truly possible? Imagine if your wildest dreams, your subconscious thoughts, those impulses, what if they weren't just fleeting images, but actually a potent, untapped pathway to a richer, more authentic existence? Today, we're daring to break free from those conventional shackles of pure logic.
That's right. We're diving deep into André Breton's Manifestos of Surrealism. And it's not just about art history. I mean, it is that. But it's more a revolutionary philosophy, a radical proposal for liberating the human mind.
Yeah, we're talking about reimagining reality itself. We've gathered the key texts, the manifestos, the context, and our mission today is to really unpack it all.
We'll look at Breton himself, this fascinating figure, the core ideas, and pretty startling stuff. How surrealism evolved through these different manifestos.
And crucially, how these powerful, sometimes pretty mind-bending concepts can surprisingly apply to your daily life, sparking creativity, challenging how you think about, well, pretty much everything.
Exactly. In a world so driven by facts, figures, data, this is a shortcut to understanding the often overlooked power of the irrational, the imaginative, the subconscious.
Get ready for some aha moments, hopefully, and maybe a fresh perspective on what it means to be truly well-informed beyond just the logical. Okay, so let's unpack the mind behind this revolution. André Breton, often called the Pope of Surrealism, French writer, poet, art theorist, lived 1896 to 1966.
But the really fascinating thing, I think, is his background, this unique blend he had.
Right.
Like a clinical, almost scientific way of looking at things, combined with this real poetic fire.
Right. Before surrealism was even a thing, he trained in medicine and psychiatry, actually served in neurological wards during World War I.
Yeah, working with soldiers suffering from shell shock. And it was right there, amidst all that chaos and trauma, that he first bumped into Freud's ideas, psychoanalysis.
Dream analysis, free association, that kind of thing.
Precisely. And that experience, it gave him this sort of, well, maybe pseudoscientific foundation for his later artistic theories. It wasn't just pulling ideas out of thin air, you see.
And he was involved with Dada first, right? That nihilistic anti-art movement.
He was, yeah. But he got disillusioned. Felt it was too destructive, maybe. He wanted something more constructive.
So he wasn't just, like, reporting on a trend. He was the architect, defining it, laying down the rules, basically issuing a call to arms.
Absolutely. And that unique background, the clinical eye, now the poetic soul, that's key to understanding his core argument for surrealism. It wasn't just, let's make weird art. It was a revolutionary call.
Yeah.
Total liberation of the human mind.
Total liberation. Wow. So what was the main point?
Well, his central thesis was that our rational conscious mind, the one we use all day to make lists and pay bills, is actually kind of repressive.
Repressive. How so?
It holds back a truer, much richer reality, the one found in our subconscious. You know, our dreams, desires, unfiltered thoughts. The stuff that doesn't always make logical sense.
Okay, I see. So the big question for him was,
how do we break free? How do we escape what he called the poverty of reality? This wasn't just about being bored. It was about this state imposed by society's obsession with logic, utility, efficiency.
A reality that stops us from accessing the true functioning of thought, as he put it.
Exactly. And his answer, very emphatically, was surrealism. Not just an art style, remember, but a whole philosophical movement aiming to unify that internal world, dreams, desires, with external reality.
It sounds like he diagnosed a kind of spiritual or imaginative crisis in post-World War I Western society. Too much rationalism had made it bankrupt, in his view.
That's a great way to put it. Bankrupt, yeah. And surrealism was the proposed solution, the ultimate goal, to resolve this massive contradiction between dream and reality.
Melt them together.
Into an absolute reality, a surreality. And this wasn't just about changing your own headspace. It was about transforming society, too. It really challenges what we even consider normal.
A profound shift, no doubt. So if that was the grand vision, how did he actually lay out this blueprint? Because Manifestos of Surrealism isn't just one book, right?
Not at all. It's a collection. Foundational texts, fiery arguments, polemics, you know, critical essays, spanning nearly two decades. Mm-hmm. It really charts the movement's birth, its evolution, its ups and downs.
And the purpose was, well, pretty clear.
Oh, yeah. Define surrealism, lay out the philosophy, prescribe the methods, how to actually do it, and declare its revolutionary aims. It's like a user's manual, a declaration of independence, and a historical record all rolled into one.
Who was he writing for initially?
Avant-garde artists. intellectuals mainly.
Yeah.
But the idea has caught on fast, spread to anyone feeling kind of hemmed in by mundane reality.
And it shows an evolution, you said, from poetry to politics.
Definitely. Starts with this real poetic fervor, then gets much more politically engaged, especially later, and then even more reflective, adapting to changing times.
Okay, let's dig into the first one then. The Manifesto of Surrealism, 1924. This is where it really kicks off.
It really does. And it doesn't pull any punches. It launches this scathing critique of realism, of the rationalist mindset. Breton argues they just lead to mediocrity. They imprison imagination.
He even attacked the traditional novel, called it psychologically banal.
He did. His message was urgent. We have to tap into the subconscious. He gave massive credit to Freud for opening that door, asserted the omnipotence of the dream.
And this is where we got that famous definition, right? Almost sounds like a scientific definition.
It does. Surrealism, psychic automatism in its pure state, basically expressing how thought actually works, dictated by thought itself, with no control from reason, no worries about aesthetics or morals, just pure flow.
And the main method for achieving this?
Automatic writing. That was key.
Yeah.
And he gave practical advice. Quiet place, clear mind, write fast. Don't pause, don't think, don't censor.
Let it all pour out.
Exactly. The goal wasn't just self-expression, though. It was to find beauty in unexpected places. The marvelous, he called it. Found in bizarre juxtapositions, startling images. Things that shock you awake.
That idea of bypassing the conscious filter, automatic writing, it's central.
Totally central. And what's brilliant is Breton didn't just tell you about it, he showed you. Appended right there to the first manifesto is Soluble Fish, also 1924.
Ah, right. That's not theory, is it?
Not at all. It's a practical demonstration. 32 short prose pieces, pure psychic automatism in action. No conventional plot, no logic you can follow easily.
Just see how the images.
A cascade of them. Dreamlike, often quite violent or erotic, non sequiturs, a man cut in two, clocks dissolving, stuff like that.
So it forces you to kind of feel the theory instead of just reading it.
Precisely. It's like raw evidence. This is what the actual functioning of thought looks like when you let it run free. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? What are we filtering out every single day?
It really does. It's like an invitation to embrace the messiness, let go of that need for control. But okay, if the first manifesto was this poetic invitation to dream, what happened next? The world was still dealing with war, social upheaval, politics.
Right. And that's where things take a much more confrontational turn. The second manifesto of surrealism in 1929. The tone shifts dramatically.
How so?
It goes from this poetic invitation to more like a militant command. It's way more aggressive, much more political.
Okay.
Breton starts demanding deeper commitment. He explicitly aligns surrealism with political revolution, specifically Marxism at that point.
So the goal wasn't just exploring the mind anymore.
No, the goal expanded. It was now explicitly to change life, which for him required profound moral and social revolt.
And he introduces a new concept here too, right? The supreme point.
Yeah, this philosophical idea. A point where all contradictions, life, death, real, imagine, up, down, just cease to be perceived as contradictions anymore. They merge.
And this manifesto is also known for being quite controversial.
Very. This is where Breton famously excommunicated former members, people like Antonin Artaud, Philippe Soupault, and it contains that really shocking statement.
The one about firing into a crowd.
That's the one. The simplest surrealist act consists of dashing down into the street, pistol in hand, and firing blindly into the crowd. Now, it's crucial to understand this wasn't literal.
Right. It was metaphorical.
Absolutely. It was intended as a metaphor for absolute anarchic rebellion against the social order, an extreme anti-bourgeois sentiment, a radical challenge to complacency, not an actual call for murder, but still incredibly provocative language.
Wow. Intense stuff. Highlights the ferocity of his belief, though.
Definitely. And it shows he was looking everywhere for alternatives to rationalism. Even into areas most thinkers back then would have just dismissed.
Like what?
Well, like esoteric practices. In a letter to Sears from 1925, he actually explores the link between surrealist methods and things like tarot, astrology, mediumship.
Seriously, how did he connect those?
He saw a shared goal. Both surrealism and these practices were attempts to bypass the rational mind, right? To tap into hidden knowledge, the forces of chance, the subconscious.
So reading tea leaves or automatic writing, similar channels for him.
Kind of, yeah. Channels for the subconscious, for the marvelous. It makes you think, what other fields that seem totally separate might actually hold keys to understanding if we just dropped our rigid logical boundaries?
That's a fascinating connection. art meets divination shows how much he was pushing against every established boundary. Okay, let's jump forward. 1942, World War II is raging, Breton's in exile.
Right. And he writes Prolegomena to a third surrealist manifesto or not. The title itself suggests some uncertainty, maybe.
And the tone is different.
Yeah, it's more somber, more measured. Understandable, given the context of a world in ruins. He reaffirms the core principles, especially psychic automatism, but he also subtly notes that some artists had abandoned it. Maybe a dig at Dali.
And what's the new need he identifies?
He argues that in this shattered world, humanity desperately needs a new collective myth. And he believes surrealism could help create it by accessing these deep, archetypal, unconscious structures.
He even mentions great transparence.
Yeah, these sort of mythological beings or psychic forces he believed influence humanity. It suggests a move towards something even deeper, maybe more mystical or connected to a universal consciousness.
Okay, so stepping back from the individual manifestos, if we connect all these dots, what are the really essential takeaways for someone listening today? The core themes.
Well, number one, absolutely foundational, is the primacy of the subconscious and the dream. For Breton, this wasn't just random noise. It was a reservoir of truth, desire, creativity. Dreams were seen as a superior form of reality, even.
Which was pretty revolutionary at the time, challenging centuries of prioritizing reason.
Hugely revolutionary. And flowing directly from that is the total rejection of rationalism and realism. Logic, reason, art that just imitates reality. He saw these as repressive, stifling forces. He was violently opposed.
And the key to breaking free.
Psychic automatism. Not just an art technique, but like a spiritual or psychological discipline. Direct access to unfiltered thought.
To find the marvelous.
Exactly. The pursuit of the marvelous was the aesthetic goal. Finding beauty in the unexpected, the startling, the bizarre, what he called convulsive beauty.
And this wasn't just personal navel-gazing. It had a bigger purpose.
Definitely. Art as a tool for revolution, moving from personal psychological liberation towards changing society, challenging oppressive structures, family, church, state, the whole lot.
That's a powerful set of themes. And there's also the emotional side, right? Like mad love.
Yes. The redemptive power of mad love, l'amour fou. This passionate, obsessive, transformative love that just defies social norms and logic. It was seen as another gateway to the surreal, a way boundaries dissolve.
And one more, chance.
Right. The importance of objective chance, those meaningful coincidences. When the outside world seems to suddenly align with your inner thoughts or desires, like the universe giving you a little wink, it dissolves that barrier between inner and outer.
Okay, this is where it gets really practical, maybe. How can these radical, century-old ideas actually apply to your life today? Because they seem pretty out there.
They do, but they're surprisingly useful. First off, unlocking creativity and overcoming blocks. Think about automatic writing. We call it free writing or morning pages now, maybe. Just letting yourself write without judgment. It's fantastic for bypassing that inner critic, generating fresh ideas for anything, writing, art, even business strategy.
Just get it down on paper, no matter how weird.
Exactly. Then, think about challenging personal and professional dogma. Apply that surrealist mindset. Question your own rational beliefs. Your routines, your goals. Are your habits actually efficient or just habits? Are your career goals really yours or are they what society expects?
It's about disrupting your own internal status quo.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And what about embracing serendipity and chance? We usually dismiss coincidences, but what if you started paying attention to those objective chance moments?
Instead of shrugging them off.
Yeah. See them as little prompts, maybe nudges towards new directions or insights. It makes you more open, more adaptable, less rigid.
Okay, that makes sense. And dreams.
Definitely harness the power of dreams. Keep a dream journal. It's not just for poets. It can be a really practical way to understand your anxieties, desires, hidden thought patterns. Use your dreams as fuel for insight or creativity. It's a direct line to that subconscious Breton valued so highly.
And for problem solving, you mentioned juxtaposition.
Right. For innovative problem solving, use that classic surrealist technique. Force together unrelated things. What happens if you try to solve a marketing problem using concepts from, I don't know, marine biology? Or force departments that never talk to collaborate using only bizarre terms?
It forces you out of your usual thinking patterns, thinking without the box entirely.
You got it. Ultimately, I think the most valuable lesson from the manifestos is simply this. Our perceived reality isn't the only one. It's not the whole story.
The realms of dream, imagination, the subconscious, they aren't just escapes.
No. They're essential, powerful, truthful parts of being human. parts we've often been taught to ignore or suppress because they aren't purely logical.
So maybe a final thought for everyone listening.
Yeah, something to chew on. In a world that's increasingly driven by data, by algorithms, by explicit logic, how much of your own creative, maybe even spiritual potential, are you unknowingly shutting down by sticking too rigidly to the rational?
What if the biggest limits aren't out there, but they're the mental prisons we build ourselves, just from relying too much on logic?
Exactly. How much of your rational adult self is maybe suppressing a richer, stranger, more marvelous inner world that's just waiting to be explored?
André Breton's Manifestos of Surrealism. It's fierce, it's poetic, it's intellectually explosive. It really did change 20th century art and thought forever.
Its unique value, I think, is that uncompromising demand for a total reimagining of reality. It feels like a timeless, vital call to wake up the dormant powers of our imagination.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.